Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. With major roads in Venezuela blocked by protesters, we will begin with the standoff between student protesters and the Maduro government. The author of Comandante, Hugo Chavez's Venezuela, Rory Carroll, who up until recently was the UK Guardian correspondent in Caracas, Venezuela, joins us to discuss growing opposition to an increasingly unpopular government and his article at The Guardian, Venezuela, Chaos and Thuggery Take the Place of the Pretty Revolution. Then we'll analyze Secretary of Defense Hagel's budget plans for 2015 that seeks to downsize the army but increase special forces and spend more on cyber warfare. Winslow Wheeler, a 31-year veteran of Pentagon procurement at the U.S. Senate and General Accounting Office, joins us to discuss Hagel's plans to keep most of the budget-busting weapons systems like the F-35 that is exorbitantly more expensive and less effective than the planes it is replacing, and the extent to which Hagel, who promised to fight waste, fraud and bloat, appears to have been captured by the pork barrel politics of the Pentagon. Then finally, we'll go to Mexico City for a follow-up on the capture of the drug lord El Chapo Guzman and speak with Dudley Althaus, the Global Post senior correspondent in Mexico. We will look into the possible role of U.S. special forces and intelligence agencies in the capture of Guzman and, while the cartel leader has been formally charged in Mexico, whether or not he will be extradited to the U.S. as top judicial officials in the U.S. are calling for. And joining us now is Rory Carroll, who up until recently was based in Caracas, Venezuela, as the UK Guardian and Observer Latin American correspondent. He is the author of Comandante, Hugo Chavez's Venezuela, and is currently the US West Coast correspondent for The Guardian. His latest article at The Guardian is Venezuela, Chaos and Thuggery Take the Place of the Pretty Revolution. Welcome to Background Briefing, Rory Carroll.
Hi, Ian. Thank you for having me.
And the revolution, the pretty revolution, La Revolución Bonita, that's a quote from Hugo Chavez. That's what he used to call the Bolivarian Revolution.
Yes. In his speeches, he would even sing about La Revolución Bonita, because for him, this signified all the good things in terms of progressive values, making Venezuela a beacon internationally for a better way to organize humanity's affairs. But on recent events now suggest otherwise.
Well, there is, of course, there has been up until a couple of days ago, the chaos in the Ukraine, particularly in Kiev, and in many squares around the world. It does seem that the town square is being recaptured as a kind of as a venue for protests in many countries, whether it's Spain, Greece, or Ukraine, or now Venezuela. So, how does this compare? Because there's been complaints from reporters I've spoken to down there about public security, about the high murder rate and the high inflation rate. But what is your sense of what's changed lately?
Yeah, I think in Venezuela, it's quite unique circumstances, and it's not really related to the coincidence that this has been happening the same time as protests in Ukraine and Thailand, for instance. Really, the protests are symptomatic of widespread grievances over the total dysfunction that we see in Venezuela, that after a decade of record oil revenues, I mean, Venezuela sits atop the world's biggest oil revenues, that all this money has gone into the country, and yet this kind of quasi-socialist, petro-populist system that Hugo Chavez bequeathed to his successor is completely dysfunctional. The economy is in chaos. Inflation is around 56% annually. There are chronic and severe shortages in basic goods like toilet paper, bread, cooking oil, flour. People often have not been paid or delays in wages. And also public security is frankly a nightmare. Venezuela is one of the highest per capita murder rates in the world. And these problems have been festering for years, but sort of come to a head recently, and with students, university students, taking a lead, saying they're fed up, and they want to achieve what they call la salida, which is the exit. In this case, the exit of the government.
But defenders of the government will point out that they won the elections against Capriles, not quite narrowly and unexpectedly so, because of the tremendous sympathy vote for the late leader Chavez. But then more recently, municipal elections went their way. So has something happened more in recent months, or is it just the culmination of a lot of frustration?
Well, the government is right that, I mean, Venezuela is not a dictatorship. It's a hybrid system. It's democratic, but also authoritarian. And so there are elections. They're not very fair. The government has lopsided advantages in the sense that it dominates and controls media, especially through kind of self-censorship. Because of the Petro state, it basically has all the money. And there's lots of intimidation, but there are you know, democratic institutions there. So the protests so far really have been done by a small, largely middle class minority. I mean, the most Venezuelans are poor, and they so far haven't really joined the protests. And for that reason, the government actually looks pretty solid, despite these scenes we're seeing of, you know, 13 people killed in the past week, and despite these kind of blockades and a lot of cocktails flying. The government is pretty solid in the sense that it controls all the key institutions, especially the army and the police, as well as the National Oil Company. And it still has a certain kind of bedrock of legitimacy among poor Venezuelans. And so I think the government certainly is not in any immediate danger of falling. And these latest protests are largely were the work of an opposition politician who kind of mobilized students or directed student protests into this kind of wider challenge to the government. And for the time being, I think the government pretty much is holding all the best cards.
So is this purely then a case of a class struggle in a country that's dominated by poor, that the government, if it has solid backing from the people who the Chavez revolution have most affected and whose lives have been most improved by it? I mean, how long before the basic dysfunction, which apparently is the case? I mean, that seems to be the real critique, is that the place is just a shambles. It's not working. And the government keeps blaming, outside forces, the CIA, the Americans, you name it, but doesn't seem to want to take responsibility for anything. But as long as it's just the face of the middle class, it would seem to me that this will be a kind of polarized and static situation, albeit one that's where the dysfunction continues. Is that the way you see it?
I mean, there's an inbuilt tension here, because even if the government prevails over these current protests, and I think they will, the huge systemic problems in the economy and the society, basically of a country that's unraveling at the seams, even though it still has lots of money, is going to remain a huge challenge to the government. And these problems are ever more encroaching on the poor, on the support base of the government. And there's sort of a Faustian pact which the government has with the poor Venezuelans, which is it provides a lot of people with government jobs, or at least government salaries, even if they're not necessarily doing any productive work. It provides lots of subsidies. For example, gasoline is basically free. It gives people free housing, or the promise of free housing, and other goodies. It also gives people free electrical goods. It sometimes orders stores to have their prices, at which point, of course, there's a stampede, especially from the slums into these stores to get these cheap goods. So the government can kind of shore up its kind of popularity and support with these measures, but they have a cost, because these same measures are what is basically hollowing out the economy and the institutions of the state. And gradually these problems are getting worse and worse and worse. And so there's plenty of signs that the poor are now beginning to get fed up, that the goodies that they're given by the government, which also includes social programs and anti-poverty programs, which in their heyday were terrific and very progressive, but they've also become victim of this kind of hollowing out of the country. And it looks increasingly that the poor are, I think, at some point could well join the middle class, not necessarily in the next few weeks or even months, but are, especially in the cities, in the urban areas, the poor are proving to be increasingly disenchanted with the Chavista government.
Again, I'm speaking with Rory Carroll, who up until recently was based in Caracas, Venezuela, as the UK Guardian and Observer Latin American correspondent. He is the author of Comandante Hugo Chavez's Venezuela and is currently the US West Coast correspondent for The Guardian. His latest article at The Guardian is Venezuela, Chaos and Thuggery Take the Place of the Pretty Revolution. Well, it would seem, though, that the economy has been incredibly mismanaged, though, in fundamental ways, because my understanding is that it's been Chinese money that's keeping this party afloat, but at the great expense of mortgaging all that oil in the ground. You say that it's an oil-rich country, so the money keeps pouring in, but it's not necessarily, in the long term, very sustainable if you've mortgaged what's under the ground. So is there any sense that Maduro government will have a dialogue? I mean, I can't imagine you can function in a country where you don't you've demonized the wealthy, and with good reason in terms of the history of an oligarchical rule up until he took over. But if you keep demonizing the middle class, it would seem to me that you know the country will become less and less productive. I mean. How much is class warfare a weapon that this government is using? Because, you know, recently the CNN crew got attacked, and the National Guardsman who saw it pointed out to them after they'd had their camera equipment confiscated that these guys were plainclothes police working for the government. So it does. There's a lot of evidence that the government itself is using thugs to intimidate and harass people whose politics they don't like and who don't support their politics.
Yes, I mean, when you look at, for example, the infrastructure, of the physical infrastructure of the country, you know, we see power cuts repeatedly. Roads and bridges are flaking. I mean, you take your life in your hands when you take a road trip across Venezuela. And industries, factories have been are often kind of rusting because they can no longer afford to import spare parts. Fields have, you know, and agriculture in many areas has withered, and there seems to be little sign of any changes or pragmatic adjustments in this kind of quasi, you know, socialist system in the future. Now, Hugo Chavez was able to kind of ride out these problems because when he was still in power and still alive, he was receiving far more money for his oil than his successor. And also Hugo Chavez had this capacity of distraction. He was a great showman. And he had also this this amazing connection with the poor that they really felt he was on their side, that even if, you know, their own lives in some ways were not necessarily getting better, but they felt that he was definitely their champion. And Nicolas Maduro doesn't have that same same flair for communication, and also he's running out of money, that he's having to borrow more billions from China, even though oil prices are still high, and that's why I think we've seen a degree of thuggishness from the state, which didn't really happen under Hugo Chavez, because Chavez was strong enough and confident enough that he didn't need to resort to these thuggish tactics, which we're now seeing in the past week, where hordes of motorbike gangs, a kind of paramilitary unit, basically known as colectivos, are a de facto extension of the state, and they roar around middle class neighborhoods, terrorizing people. But to be fair, I mean, some of the protesters have been using violent methods. We are seeing protesters attacking government property. They're throwing petrol bombs and rocks. And I mean, any state in the world would need to rein in these protesters. But Human Rights Watch and other advocacy groups have been saying that really the state response has been excessive. At least I think 10 of the 13 who have been killed have been killed by state security forces, or by, it appears, by thugs acting in the name of the government of Nicolas Maduro. And so the question now really is whether, you know, these protests will set an example for poor Venezuelans who have this often similar grievances to these middle class students. And the question is, well, will the poor join them? If not this week, maybe in a few months' time, or not, because Venezuela has a long history of these periodic explosions of social unrest. And so a lot of people were all just wondering and waiting to see, well, whether is this going to happen again.
But how much longer can a country just sort of stagnate and you've described this situation as Venezuela is a shambolic, crumbling, dysfunctional ruin. So if he's demonizing the business community and the middle class and shouting slogans and blaming everything on the CIA, the economy's not making any headway. So you either go the whole Cuban route or you make some kind of peace. I mean, that would seem to me to be the situation. Otherwise, it just seems to be the polarization will continue. I mean, it's not a sign of good governance when you do have a polarized country, frankly.
No, it's not good governance, but polarization is actually a sensible, rational policy if you're the government there, because by polarizing things and keeping the political temperature quite high, you oblige people to make a choice. And also you radicalize your opponents, who repeatedly have fallen into this trap of becoming very extreme, super shrill. They, especially the middle class or wealthy opposition leaders, screaming Stalinism and dictatorship to poor Venezuela, and they just look completely out of touch. And they're thinking, well, you know, if you have to choose between a government that provides subsidies and certain kind of social benefits versus very kind of rich oligarch type looking leaders in the opposition, the poor will side with the government. And this is a venerable strategy that Hugo Chavez very successfully used again and again, and I think Maduro hopes the same thing will happen. And also, I think in the current climate, the opposition, they don't want to sit down with the government because they feel this would legitimize the government in the eyes of their own supporters, would be seen as a betrayal. So unfortunately, although dialogue is what this country really needs, neither side really has incentive to go for it. And on your second point about the economy, despite the fact that Venezuela is a shambolic, crumbling system, it is not on the point of collapse. On the contrary, it's a petrostate, an oil state, and that every month is receiving billions of dollars that go directly into the coffers of the state, which has a very well-developed system of patronage and clientelism. And it uses these funds to shore up its own position. And so even though as things crumble around it, it can actually still control the levers, it controls the spigot of money and all the main institutions of state. It can afford to kind of buy or co-opt a lot of sectors in society. Now, this cannot go on forever and ever. It can certainly go on for a lot longer. As long as oil prices stay high, as long as oil prices stay at their current price of around $100 a barrel, this kind of shambolic system can basically kind of bumble on almost indefinitely.
So then how do you explain, Rory Carroll, the 56% inflation, the shortages of bread, flour, meat, toilet paper and other basics, the fact that airlines are threatening to cut services because the government owes them $3.3 billion, food companies are owed $2.4 billion. Does Maduro just do some kind of triage here? He just basically pays off who he needs to when all the oil money flows in, as it does, apparently, on an endless basis. Although, as I mentioned, you know, there's a price you pay when you have to borrow because you mortgage what's in the ground.
Yes, but I think you could do some triage, and what he could do and what he may do is do some kind of pragmatic concessions to economic sanity, which would be, for instance, devaluing, like a formal and big devaluation of the currency, which is artificially and hugely overvalued, and this completely basically destroys distorts the economy. Now, to devalue the currency, it would be very painful in the short term, especially for the poor. But at some point, if he feels strong enough, if the government can manage to do that and get away with it, that will reduce some of this irrationality in the economy. And similarly, if they have the wit or the political strength to reduce some of the more insane subsidies, for instance, literally giving away gasoline for free to everybody, if they can begin to maybe increase the price of gasoline, which is a politically potentially explosive decision, but if they can if they can be, you know, clever and engaging in the way they can impose a little bit of sanity there, then that can keep the show on the roads a lot longer. Now, but the issue is a big question mark over whether President Maduro really does have the wit to do that, because so far, in the 10 months since he succeeded Hugo Chavez, he's tread water. He's not taking the initiative to address any of these huge imbalances that are completely warping his own economy. So the future of the government and Chavismo depends on the ability of the government to make some of these, you know, concessions to reality. And you know, if they do, then I think they can survive, a lot longer.
So, is there any fissures within the military? I know there was some. Angel Vivas is sitting on his rooftop with a flak jacket and an assault rifle. I believe they call him Rambo, but he apparently objected to the oath, the Cuban inspired oath that the military have to swear to, which is fatherland, socialism, or death. So, is there any, given that Chavez came up in a military coup and came out of the military? Is there any, and we know that Cuba, of course, is very invested in this country because it essentially saves their economy by giving them oil subsidies once the Soviets cut them off, or the Russians. So is there any fissures in that department, given everything else that we've talked about? That would be Maduro's and the Chavistas' strength. Is it the military? I mean...
Yes, if there was to be a coup in Venezuela, it would depend on the military. Without the military, there would be, you know, a coup. And personally, I hope that there would not be a coup, because Venezuela has seen that movie too many times, and it doesn't. It never ends well. I think anecdotally, and it's my own reporting when I was in Caracas, yes, there are elements, especially mid-ranking officers in the military, who are not happy with the government. They feel especially... the fact that Cubans have been given the run of the government and of the state in many ways is offensive to many Venezuelan military officers. But the government and the revolution has been running Venezuela for 15 years now, and many times they've kind of swept out the officers that they feel would be that are not with the program. And so I think certainly the top ranks, the generals, the admirals, and the colonels. Appear to be very loyal to the government. Below that, on these other major, the captains and the majors, there may be a question mark over their loyalty. But I think that they would not be senior enough to stage a coup of their own. So that I think really the government is safe for the time being from a military coup.
Well, Rory Carroll, I thank you very much for joining us.
It was a pleasure, Ian. Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Rory Carroll, who up until recently was based in Caracas, Venezuela, as the UK Guardian and Observer Latin American correspondent. He's the author of Comandante Hugo Chavez's Venezuela, and is currently the US West Coast correspondent for The Guardian. His latest article at The Guardian is Venezuela, Chaos and Thuggery Take the Place of the Pretty Revolution. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back looking into whether Chuck Hagel, who promised to get rid of bloat, has been captured by the Pentagon's pork barrel politics.